Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show today here on the Thursday before a Memorial Day weekend. And just to wrap up what we were talking about before, I understand the frustration that is out there. Every day I get calls and emails, and the anger is palpable, okay? And I know there are a lot of people who are talking revolution, tar and feathers, and some are metaphorical, and sadly some are, they're really thinking about doing this stuff. And again, I do not like violence. It's bad for tourism, and our tourism is already bad enough out here. It's rough on the landscaping. And on a more practical level, if the people of the United States start committing mass acts of violence, it will justify everything the government wants to do to us. It'll justify police state crackdowns, detention without trial. It'll justify being put, you know, having the government putting those who speak out in detention camps. It'll justify everything that they're doing, because they'll simply say that all these acts of violence are domestic terror. They won't use the word freedom fighter or revolutionary. They have worked very hard to reshape the definition of terrorist so that it already encompasses everybody who might not like the current government. We put up a brochure on our website, whatreallyhappened.com, earlier today. This was printed up a few years back by the FBI and sent to police departments around the country. And it included people who talk about the Constitution of the United States should be considered to be terror suspects and reported to the FBI. We know the MIAC report from the Missouri Data Fusion Center came out saying basically the same thing, that people who supported Ron Paul or third-party candidates should be considered domestic terrorists. People who talk about the Bill of Rights should be considered domestic terrorists. People who thought the federal government was too big or that Israel had too much influence on our government should be considered as terrorist suspects. The Department of Homeland Security came out with their new lexicon of definitions. And again, they shifted. Terrorism included people who talk about the Constitution. Terrorist is supposed to be somebody who commits an act of terror. There's got to be an overt act, an overt crime to be a terrorist, or at least that was the old definition. Now it is simply people who are thinking bad thoughts. That's what they're talking about. And so we have to be very, very careful. And like I said, I understand there are some angry people out there. But listen, if you go around talking about, I want to blow something up and I want to set fire to this and that, you're going to get spotted by an FBI informant and you will get set up just like those poor, dumb fools up in New York last night. The FBI informant got them the bombs, got them the rocket, set them up there to be arrested by the police so they could have big headlines about domestic terrorism one day before Dick Cheney's speech trying to defend the use of torture on prisoners to defend us from terrorism, which, of course, is not what they were doing. They were using the torture to extract politically useful confessions. That's what they've been doing. So the timing between this terror plot arrest yesterday and the speeches today, it's a little too cute, and nobody's really buying it. I've been reading the tweets out on Twitter, a lot of political discussion taking place there. And nobody's buying Dick Cheney's speech, and nobody's buying that these guys in New York were any more of a threat to us than the so-called Miami 7. They were patsies set up by the FBI and manufactured to be an enemy so the government can go booga booga. Are you scared yet? Are you scared enough to give us all your money and send all your children off to fight wars? If not, we'll do something scarier. It's really what's going on there. Now, one of the most alarming things here is that yesterday, the New York Times reported Barack Obama is considering a plan for preventive detention in the United States. If implemented, this will give the president the right to detain, preventively, anybody in the United States for an indefinite period of time without trial, without due process, without habeas corpus. The president can simply say, lock those people up and never let them out again. And that will be that. Now, folks, that is not what the United States is supposed to be about. We haven't done this preventive detention on a large scale since the beginning of World War II, when they grabbed all the Japanese and locked them in the internment camps. which is now recognized to have been a very atrocious, illegal, inhumane thing to have done. And now Obama is getting ready to repeat that. So if you didn't object when it was Arab Muslims being tortured, you may find that you have no grounds to complain when it's you with the gonads hooked up to the battery cables, or worse. Now, Barack Obama is still opposed to the Truth Commission, and this actually ties in with what Greg Felton was saying about how President Obama did not want the Rosen and Weissman trial to proceed, and the reasons are actually linked. The scandal at the heart of all of this is the fact that we were lied into the war in Iraq. There was no reason to invade and conquer Iraq other than Israel said to go do it. There's no reason for us to continue to be there at all. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. And the claim that Iraq was assisting al-Qaeda rests on a single confession extracted under torture from Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, who, as soon as the pain stopped, retracted the confession and said, I just said that to get the pain to stop. And now at a time when reporters and officials are wanting to ask him what really happened to him back then that got him to say these terrible things, these knowingly false claims about al-Qaeda and Saddam, he's conveniently suicided as a danger to national security. Actually, it's national embarrassment. It really is. The same thing with Rosen and Weissman. Because the real scandal of the Rosen and Weissman spy operation isn't the information going from the Pentagon out through Larry Franklin to Rosen and Weissman through AIPAC to Israel. The real scandal is the disinformation, the lies and fabrications and fake documents coming back from Israel through AIPAC to Rosen and Weissman to Larry Franklin to the Pentagon Office of Special Plans, from there to the White House, where Bush and Cheney used it to try and convince America that Iraq was a danger to the U.S. that required immediate invasion and conquest. It was a lie. It was a lie. It was a lie. And that is the secret Barack Obama is trying to protect. If more than the torture, more than the Israeli spy ring, the big, nasty, ugly secret that they're trying as hard as they can to keep the lid on is that we were lied into a war of conquest. There is no greater crime a government, a leader, can commit against their people than to lie them into a war of conquest, to send forth our children in uniform to kill and be killed in another country so that the wealth of that country can be brought home and put into the pockets of the rich and powerful. That's exactly what has happened. That is exactly what has happened here. What the United States government did relative to Iraq is no different at all than what Adolf Hitler did regarding Poland. Adolf Hitler told the German people that Poland was about to attack. We're in imminent danger. They hate us. They hate us for our freedoms. I don't know that Hitler said that, but I mean, it's the same basic thing. Poland hates us. They're going to kill us unless we attack them first. This whole idea of preemptive war was an invention of Nazi Germany. And that is the principle under which our government has been sending our kids into Afghanistan, into Iraq. Now we're bombing Pakistan, soon to go into Iran. And if the American people are finally forced to confront the fact that the U.S. government didn't really have a good reason to go into Iraq, other than Israel said to do it, it's going to make it a lot harder to get American support for a new war in Iran. And this is why it is very important for you, my listeners and my readers, to take it upon yourself to keep this torture scandal in the minds of everybody you know, on every blog you know, keep it on the Twitter, keep it on MySpace, keep it on Facebook. Keep haranguing your local media that they have not got to stay focused on this, and tell them that the big scandal at the heart of this isn't how many people were tortured or whether Congress knew about it or not. It's that the sole confession on which the U.S. government justified invading Iraq was a confession extracted under torture. That's the big scandal. That's the one that the U.S. government is desperate to keep a lid on, because that crime delegitimizes the entire U.S. government. There is no place in the Constitution that says the U.S. government can lie to the American people. It is not in there. And the 10th Amendment prohibits them from assuming that. The instant the U.S. government lied to you to trick you into supporting a war of conquest against an innocent nation, the government acted unconstitutionally, it acted illegally, it ceased to be the lawful government of this land when it committed that crime against you. We're talking about all the war crimes that the U.S. government has committed in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Guantanamo, Camp X-Ray, Abu Ghraib. The first war crime they committed was lying to start that war. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Doggone, I mean the panic is on. Can't get no way, can't draw no pay. Unemployment getting worse every day.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking about the torture scandal. We're talking about the cover-ups and the obfuscations, mostly obfuscations. And we're talking about the fact that at the heart of all of these scandals, whether it's the AIPAC spy scandal or the torture scandal or the outing of Valerie Plame, they all converge at one point. And the basic plan that you have to follow is look for where all the cover-ups overlap. Look for that most protected point, and there you're going to find the biggest, blackest, darkest secret of all. And that is that we as a nation, we the American people, were tricked into a war we had no business being in and would not otherwise have agreed to were it not for the dirty tricks and the lies and the deceptions. Iraq was not a threat to the United States, even if they had a nuclear bomb, because the United States has thousands of nuclear bombs, and it has thousands of missiles, and it has Trident submarines, and it has stealth bombers, and it has Minuteman missiles, and it has bombers, and all of this stuff that have cost trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, back when a trillion really was a lot of money. And either that deterrent works or it doesn't. And if it does, then Iraq was never a danger to the United States. And if it doesn't work, then we've all been cheated of all of that money that was looted from us to build all of these horror weapons that are out there. You can't have it both ways. If the money was well spent, if we have a deterrent, then Iraq was never a threat. We invaded simply to invade. We're the aggressors. We started the war without a real honorable reason. That's the big, ugly secret. There were no weapons of mass destruction. It was not a mistake. They knew going in there were no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam had destroyed all of his chemical and biological weapons that he bought from the United States. Remember Donald Rumsfeld's handshake with Saddam? There were no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam would have used them when we invaded. That's why you have these kind of weapons as a deterrent. I mean, just for a second, imagine. It's Baghdad. U.S. bombs are falling all over, destroying his country. And Saddam is standing there, and the U.S. is gunning for Saddam. That's been made very, very clear. They want him personally. They got him. They put him at the end of a rope. But can you picture during that first attack when all of these horrible weapons are coming down, destroying his country, and Saddam is standing there with a little vial of anthrax saying, well, I guess I better not use this or I could really be in trouble. It's not going to happen. Once you're attacked, once you are invaded, the rest of the world would say you're justified in using whatever weapons you have to protect the lives of your countrymen. If Saddam had had those weapons of mass destruction, he would have used them then and there. We are now finding out that Dick Cheney ordered the people searching for weapons of mass destruction to use torture to try and uncover where they were. For all you Kafka fans out there, we are being told that the weapons search team refused to use such methods. If true, congratulations on them for being human beings. If false, no big deal. We get lied to all the time by this government. But that is the big, ugly secret. It's not the existence of the torture itself. It's not when or if Congress knew. The big, ugly secret they're all trying to protect is we were lied into the war in Iraq, and why are you not furious about that? Especially those of you who lost family members or have family members come back crippled for life from this conflict that shouldn't have happened, didn't need to happen. There was no reason for it except a bunch of very rich people said, you know, if we can trick those dumb Americans into going in and conquering Iraq, we can make ourselves richer in sin. I'm willing to trade several thousand young Americans, as long as they're not in my family. I don't know them. I don't have to go to the funerals. I don't have to look at those coffins. I'm willing to trade their lives for a couple of $1 million in my pocket. Tremendous deal there. Yeah, let's go do that. Didn't work out so well. Well, let's try it in Iran. We'll just keep going until we get it right. Those dumb Americans, they'll fall for anything. We'll just wave the dead guy, what's his name, Osama bin something or other. We'll just wave him at them. They'll bow and scrape and give us their money and throw their children at us. Say, here, take my money, take my child, go out and get the terrorists, because I'm truly afraid of Osama bin Laden, and I don't want him coming around here anymore. Folks, the truth is, you're more likely to die from a lightning strike than from a terrorist attack. And that is the absolute truth here right now. And we all go on about our lives, and lightning is just a fact of life. And we don't pay any attention to it. Nobody's declaring war on the thunderclouds, except maybe Al Gore. You're being used by your own government. They are scaring you into going along with a policy of invasion and conquest of other countries that didn't do anything to us. It's preemptive war. We must attack them because they might attack us. That was Hitler's rationale for going into Poland. People get upset when I compare the U.S. government, or the government of Israel for that matter, to the Nazis. But, you know, the duck test applies here. If it walks like a Nazi and smells like a Nazi and sounds like a Nazi and acts like Nazis, they're Nazis. Different uniform, different flag, same mindset. It's not that fantastical a situation. Remember, our previous president's grandfather financed Adolf Hitler. The Bush family made a lot of money off of the Third Reich before the war started and before they got nailed with the Trading with the Enemies Act. So, now, last week Barack Obama reversed himself on the issue of releasing these 2,000 photographs of torture, which have not been seen yet. The ones that are floating around the net, they say, have been leaked. Those are actually from 2006, and we've all seen them already. It's a false flag, not a false flag. It's basically a limited hangout. They're trying to make you think that, well, there's no really big deal about these new photos, so, you know, go think about something else for a while. But those pictures that have been let out in the last few days are from 2006. This newest batch of photos, 2,000 photos, was the subject of a 5-year lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union. They began the lawsuit in 2004. It just ended. The court said the pictures must be released. There is no option here. When Barack Obama steps in and says, no, don't release him, he is committing obstruction of justice. Now, we are getting a report now that the reason, the real reason, that Barack Obama reversed his decision on this is that he took a look at some of the photos. And apparently what is in these photos is considerably worse than what we've already seen to date. To wit, there are photos of Iraqi children being sodomized in front of their mothers. For some reason, presumably they think the Iraqi women knew where the weapons of mass destruction were, and this was their way of getting them to talk. But there are photos of this, supposedly, and it was these photos that Barack Obama said, we can't let this out. This will make us look like modern-day versions of the Nazis. Yeah, probably. But the reality here is that if those photos are not released, if they are kept under wraps, if the videotapes remain destroyed, and I for one think that there's probably still copies of them out there, if information continues to be withheld and covered up and suppressed, then this scandal is never going to go away. We, the American people, and the rest of the world are justified in allowing our imaginations to run wild and just imagine the very worst things that can be done to a human body were done to captured and helpless prisoners by the United States government and its enablers, its contractors around the world. We know from Binyam Mohammed that physical damage has been inflicted on these people. In the case of Binyan, his genitalia were repeatedly sliced with razor blades. The waterboarding was not the worst of it. And behind all of it, is that the entire Iraq war and the 9/11 official report rests on confessions extracted under torture. You don't get much more Soviet than that. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I want to give you some facts here that are going to put this whole thing in perspective in terms of government cover-up and the lies and deceptions that they have used to control you. The bottom line here is, and I think most Americans are finally beginning to realize this, we are the most lied to people on the face of the earth. The amount of actual truth we get from government and from the corporate media is minuscule. It's everything is spin. It's designed to get you to buy the current products, to surrender your money for this or that new cause. I mean, we found out just this last week that the Humane Society of the United States, they've got all these commercials on there about all these poor, suffering pets in the animal shelters and how much they need your money to take care of them. Then we find out that less than 4 cents out of every dollar donated actually goes to animal shelters, and the rest goes to pay for salaries and expense accounts and lobbying and political activism, and basically, pays for them to go around and promote, various political causes. And it's not really there. It's not really being used to take care of those animals you see in the commercials. It's just all hoaxes. It's all frauds here. Now, give you an example. Put this in perspective. When the Challenger exploded, and I actually knew one of the crew members on that when I was in Italy when that happened. When the Challenger exploded, $100 million was allocated to investigate what happened to this shuttle and find out what went wrong. When Columbia was destroyed on reentry, they allocated $175 million to find out what went wrong. When 9/11 happened, the greatest, supposedly, terrorist attack in the history of the United States, $3 million was originally allocated for the official investigation. $3 million. $100 million for Challenger, $175 million for Columbia, $3 million for 9/11. Now, when people started complaining and saying, you can't even start a real investigation for $3 million, the U.S. government grudgingly raised it to $15 million. Okay? But that was only after people complained. Only after people complained. $15 million. $100 million for Challenger, $175 million for Columbia, $15 million for 9/11, supposedly this greatest terror attack. And for the space shuttle accidents, you have tons of data. There's telemetry. There's all these recorders. There's film. All kinds of data as to what was going on. So it's not like you had to go out and do a lot of searching and digging for it. The information is there. It just needs to be gone through and collated and some tests. 9/11 supposedly was this big mystery about, how it all happened and where it all came from. And they only allocated $3 million for the investigation, barely enough to pull together a report and print it, which is all they really did. And now we're finding out, of course, that most of the information in that report as regards who was behind the attack came from confessions extracted under torture. And if you'll remember, when the 9/11 Commission was set up, they were specifically instructed by the Bush administration to focus on the intelligence failings that allowed 9/11 to happen. They were specifically told not to investigate how and why and who were behind the actual attacks themselves. So this is like in the wake of the sinking of the Titanic, that you set up a commission to find out, and you say you're only allowed to focus on defects in the metal in the ship, which allowed the ship to be destroyed so easily. And so you'll get a very nice official report about how the rivets had a lot of slag inclusions that made them weak, how the plate iron that was used in large portions of the hull was really way too brittle in that cold Atlantic water and was the inappropriate metal for the hull. And you get all this interesting information, but you wouldn't be finding out about Captain E.J. Smith ignoring the ice warnings, the missing binoculars from the lookout, the head of the ship line, Andrew, I'm blanking on his last name, basically ordered the captain to go faster, knowing that there were icebergs out there. That stuff would have been left out because it was politically inconvenient. And we're in the same situation here with this investigation. So if you want to know what is a real investigation and what is a cover-up, you just start by looking at how much money is being spent. Real investigations, $100 million, $175 million. Phony cover-up, let's make it look like we've got an investigation, $15 million. It's not a real investigation. It's investigation mania. Not a real investigation, but an incredible simulation. We've got costumes. We've got lights. We have confessions extracted under torture, and we've got a very nice fancy printing job. And the 9/11 Commission's report is no more credible than the Warren Commission. And that is really where that is. So. Now, I mentioned earlier in the show, but I'm going to touch this over one more time, because we're facing serious economic problems, and already governments are talking about raising taxes. The voters of California just told Arnold no, rather forcefully, and governments are talking about raising taxes. They're talking more about, yet another gas tax. I think it was New York just raised their sales tax. It's all over the place. We have less and less money, so what does government do? They raise taxes on us again. The message coming out from the halls of government is you must make do with less so that we can have more. That is the unified message of both political parties. You must make do with less so we can have more. More for war, more for parties, more for lobbyists, more for all the nonstop party on Sodom on the Potomac. And they're going to keep on doing it as long as you let them do it. So now we're getting word that Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has, and I agree with this decision, they're cutting funding for the missile defense system. First of all, the system is a violation of the ABM treaty. We're not supposed to be building these things at all. Second, it hasn't done very well in tests. America's missile defense system can hit an incoming target if that target conveniently has a homing beacon on it, which I don't think our enemies are going to do. Second, the latest Russian reentry vehicles are maneuverable. They can sort of dipsy-doodle through the air, which immediately renders obsolete any idea of predicting where that warhead is going to be anytime in the future. Our entire missile defense strategy rests on the idea that the missile is following a ballistic arc from basically wherever it's separated from its launch vehicle. Or from, in the case of the MIRVs, from where it's separated from the bus. But the individual MIRV vehicles on Russia's newest missiles can basically twist around a little bit. So you can't predict where they're going to be, and that renders the missile defense system completely obsolete. So I'm in agreement. We shouldn't have been spending money there anyway. We have hospitals and schools to take care of. But the part I'm really upset about is Israeli defense officials have basically announced that Israel's Arrow 3 missile defense system that they are building will be fully funded by the United States yet again this year. So at a time when our government is cutting R&D funds for our missile defense system, they are still sending your tax money over to Israel to pay for their rocket systems. Now, this has got to tell you a great deal about the so-called special relationship between Israel and the United States. They keep using that phrase, special relationship, like it's above reproach and above questioning. I want to know what that relationship is. Is it bribery? Is it blackmail? Is it, taking advantage of the belief in an end times and the sure and certain knowledge that if we help Israel start World War III, the rapture will happen and we'll all get sucked up into heaven, except for you non-believers, of course. I want to know what this special relationship is, where no matter what Israel does, the United States will do nothing. No matter what Israel wants, the United States cannot refuse. At a time when we have men and women, American men, American women, and American children sleeping in alleys and eating out of trash cans, we can still send billions of dollars to Israel for them to build an anti-missile system. Which, if Russia comes in on the side of a war with Iran, will be just as useless and pointless as the American missile defense system. And one more thing about that. If the other side is sending rockets your way filled with germs and chemicals, which is what they're always accusing, Israel's always saying these other countries have. They said the same thing about Iraq. If they're sending these germs and chemical rockets towards you, and you blow them up in the sky over your cities, guess where the germs and chemicals settle down? You're not really thinking very carefully about this thing. In any event, if Israel wants to build an Arrow 3, fine, let them go ahead and do it. Why are we paying for it? Why are we paying for it at a time when we're losing our homes and losing our jobs and losing our businesses? That's what I want to know. It's just amazing. Meanwhile, Israel wants to pass a law making it a jailable offense for Palestinians to commemorate or in any way acknowledge the invasion by Israel 60 years ago that took their homes away. It's jail if you deny the Holocaust, but jail if you mention the Nakba. Talk about a double standard. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
See how far 515 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here.
This country is coming to, I sure would like to know, if they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die, doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America, welcome back to the last segment of our show today here, and I want to take a moment as we head into the Memorial Day weekend to talk about those whose memories we honor. And I know that the corporate media, it's all war movies, except for the Twilight Zone marathon and sporting events and all the rest of it. And war is great, and I love the sting of battle, and you get your George C. Scott up there. But if you've ever seen the movie All Quiet on the Western Front, you realize that those who have to go off to war and survive it come back with a very, very different view about it. Now, my family on my mother's side has been in the United States since before it was the United States. I had family fight and die in pretty much every war America has ever fought. One of my ancestors signed the Declaration of Independence. Another one was involved with the Boston Tea Party. We had family on both sides of the Civil War. And I was thinking this last week about my maternal grandfather, Walter Smith, who volunteered. He was in the New Hampshire State Guard, and he had actually ridden with Teddy Roosevelt with the Rough Riders very briefly toward the end of that campaign. And Teddy Roosevelt was recruiting volunteer units to serve in France before the U.S.'s official entry into World War One. And so Walter volunteered, and he served and served for the entire war. I have a photograph of him standing there in France. Right after the war ended, he's wearing his victory medal. And by that point, he'd already lost a lung to German mustard gas. And I still have his helmet and his gas mask, supplied by the lowest bidder, obviously, because it didn't work. And he was an honorable man. We didn't always see eye to eye. We're both people of strong wills and strong opinions. But I have to wonder, after all that he risked and all that he lost in service to the United States of America, and after he came home from the war, he stayed involved in politics because he believed in the system and he believed in the principles of the United States. He was drinking buddies with Dick Nixon. And as a small boy, I briefly lived with my grandparents, and I used to see Dick Nixon come over. Dick was helping Senator Stiles Bridges prepare for his run against Kennedy during what would have been Kennedy's second term if the assassination had not happened. So my grandfather was very much a believer and supporter of the United States, and he showed it. He walked his talk, and he had the scars to prove it, and the medals. So I'm wondering if he were still alive today. I mean, he passed away while we still had at least the comfortable illusion of the United States as we were taught it was in the state schools and on the corporate media. But if he were alive today, seeing what was going on, I have to wonder if he would still be as enthusiastic to go out there and risk losing a lung, knowing what the United States that he sacrificed so much for was going to turn into. And I think the answer has to be a resounding no. My wife also had family who suffered through the wars. And she said if her father was still alive, same thing. He'd say, put me in a wheelchair, take me down to the anti-war protest. This is wrong, what we're doing. So during this weekend, and I know we've got a caller on the line. I'm going to get to you in just a minute. During this weekend, in between the hot dogs and the sporting events and the Twilight Zone episodes, take a moment to really think about those members of your family or those friends who have perished in America's wars. And ask yourself, if they were alive today and seeing what the United States government has become, would they still be proud? Would they be proud? And I think you'll agree with me, probably the answer would be no. And probably a lot of them would say, I was a fool to have sacrificed what I sacrificed for it to lead to what we see today. All right, I'm going to put that one down here. We're going to go to Scott in Austin. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Aloha, Mike. Very well said, and I think it dovetails exactly with what I was wanting to say, which is that we must safeguard our liberty. We can't, you know, sit back and let others do it. And in that mindset, me and a handful of other Ron Paul activists, we got together and created an organization. It's a state-level PAC. It's called TAG, Texas for Accountable Government. And if you go to tagtexas.org, you can find out some information. Texas legislature meets once every other year. And they try and cram all these bills in, and they're all in committee right now, and a lot of them are, there are some rather egregious ones that are coming through the pipe right now. We were able to stop, it looks like, sobriety checkpoints, but there's a couple others. There's one, SB 1426, which is going to allow the government to put license plate scanning cameras on highways, and it'll be entered into a database, which they can keep in perpetuity, and go back and find out, you know, what your where your traveling habits were. There's another one, SB 261, which is going to further encroach upon times in which they can forcibly withdraw blood. Right now, they can do it only when there's a serious bodily injury in an accident, but they want to.
I thought they could do it every April 15th.
That's right. That's right. Well, hey, and if HCR 50. Gets through, maybe we can kind of start to address that problem too. HCR 50 is the Texas sovereignty bill, and so we need people to support that. So everyone in Texas that's listening, please call your own representatives as well as the ones listed on Texans for Accountable Government, the committee members that are there. It'll have a great effect, as we already saw. We're able to take on MAD, who were pushing hard for the sobriety checkpoint bill. And they were just overwhelmed, and I got inside info on that. One of the MAD members was grousing about how this unknown group came along that was very passionate that kind of spoiled their plans.
Well, listen, Scott, I'm going to ask you a big favor here because it is my other radio show that has more of a listenership down in Texas than
right.
the current one. So I'm going to ask you to make a point next Tuesday after we're through the holiday weekend and we've slept off the hangovers. I'd like you to call into my other show and mention that because we have a huge listenership down in Texas on that other show.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be too late. I think they're going to be working on that tomorrow and maybe through the weekend.
I'm sorry. Missed
there,
the opportunity.
Still there. I will make an effort to do that.
Please do. Thanks an awful lot.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right. Have a good evening. All right. That was Scott in Texas. And let's see. Let's finish up here. Yesterday, you probably heard me talk about this scandal that is brewing in Ireland where this Commission on Child Sexual Abuse is looking back over the last 30 years at various institutions that were run by the Irish Catholic Church, and they have found this hideous and, in their words, endemic pattern of child rape, molestation, and abuse that was allowed to simply continue. Nobody wanted to do anything about it, and involved thousands and thousands of victims. And they're just, it's just now starting to come out, and it's beginning to remind people a lot of the endemic abuse problem that was up in Canada with their church-run schools for the indigenous people that apparently, in many cases, actually killed some of the students and just explained it away as natural causes, an accident, and all of that. Really horrific thing. Now we're getting a story. For those of you who think we're living in the 21st century, wrong. We are being dragged kicking and screaming back to the Middle Ages. As the American Empire starts to fall, as Rome fell, we are being dragged back to the Dark Ages. Over in the Democratic Republic of Congo, there is an epidemic of witch hysteria taking place, and it is focusing on supposed child witchcraft, where these various priests are extorting money from parents and from their parishioners, claiming to go into trances and denouncing various children as witches. In a way, it's kind of this weird reversal of what happened in Salem, where the children were accusing the adults of being witches and getting them hung, and in some cases pressed to death. But this is now raging across the Congo in the name of Jesus. And we're seeing these witchcraft trials and witchcraft persecutions. It never really seems to go away. There were actual burnings for witchcraft in Mexico in the 1990s. And here we are in the 21st century with computers, man on the moon, spacecraft already out of the solar system. We understand DNA. We understand the elemental nature of matter. And still, we have this religion. The only known contagious psychosis is driving people insane across the face of the globe. And it is time for it to stop. Have we not killed enough of our fellow human beings over this ridiculous argument of whose deity has the biggest genitals? We human beings, whether Christian, Jew, Muslim, whatever, we can get along. History has shown that. But we get these opportunists, these charlatans, these con artists standing up and saying, God says that I should go attack Iraq. And there is something defective in our brains where we say, okay, well, if he says God told him to go attack Iraq, we must go kill these people. Or God has told me this is a witch, burn her or him or them. Or God has told me that we should go take this land away from these other people because God meant for us to have it in his infinite mercy. There's something wrong with our brains that even here in the 21st century, we fall for this same scam over and over again. God wills it, God wills it, God wills it. Until next time, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully. Be very careful over this weekend. Holiday weekend, a lot of crazy people out on the roads. And aloha, America.